Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Hey, friends, and welcome to this episode of Now Hear This, Canby. I'm James Walton. I'll be reading the news. Thanks for listening. The Oregon legislature on Monday succeeded in doing something it had only managed to do in 2 out of 10 tries since 1911, and that is to pass new electoral maps for the state's congressional and legislative districts. Now the question is whether they can hold up in court, with furious Republicans promising legal challenges and saying they were shut out of the process. The stakes for this decade's redistricting task were especially high, considering Oregon came into the process with a new 6th seat in Congress following a 10.6% growth from 2010 to 2020. That's well above the U.S. average of 7.4%. It was the first time in 40 years the state gained a seat. Oregon ranked 11th nationally in population growth over the last decade, according to the 2020 census data. But the congressional map favored by Democrats was heavily weighted in their party's favor, according to even nonpartisan analysts, giving Democrats a reliable 5 out of Oregon's 6 congressional seats, 83%. Even though the state's electorate, while solidly tilted towards the left, is nowhere close to 83% Democratic. 4 of the state's 6 districts contain portions of Portland, Oregon's largest and most liberal-leaning city. Still, Democratic leaders on Monday hailed the new districts as fair and representative, with Representative Andrea Salinas, a Democrat from Lake Oswego, and the co-chair of the House Committee on Redistricting, saying the maps were, quote, meeting the highest of legal standards and incorporating feedback we heard from Oregonians across the state. Governor Kate Brown also applauded what she characterized as compromise among competing viewpoints, though the votes were strictly along party lines after House Speaker Tina Kotek reneged on a power-sharing deal with Republican leadership last week. But Representative Christine Drazen, House Minority Leader and Republican from here in Canby, blasted the process in the harshest of terms, calling it, quote, a wake-up call for Oregonians. They know Democrats had to cheat to get these maps across the floor, she said. They should be ashamed that they have gerrymandered Oregonians out of their shot at fair elections for the next decade. Oregon law prohibits gerrymandering for partisan advantage, and Drazen promised the maps passed Monday would face, and ultimately be overturned by, a withering legal assault, as did Senate Minority Leader Fred Girard, who's a Republican from Staten. The law requires us to keep communities of interest together in the redistricting process, Girard said. The only community of interest this map seeks to keep together are Democrat voters. Governor Kate Brown struck a cautiously optimistic tone in her latest statewide COVID-19 update on Tuesday, a departure from the dire warnings that have accompanied her briefings for much of the past 2 months amid a surge of new coronavirus infections and hospitalizations fueled by the highly contagious Delta variant. The governor highlighted that the number of patients hospitalized with COVID-19 has declined since setting records earlier this month, though the seven-day averages of new cases of 1,621 is essentially unchanged from a week ago. I know this isn't the fall that any of us had hoped for or expected, Brown said. At the end of June, we were hopeful that a lot of our communities would be free of COVID-19. Unfortunately, the Delta variant changed everything. Canby has seen its share with more than 400 new cases linked to the community's zip code since August 20th. The area's infection rate of 9,533 cases per 100,000 residents has increased by 27% since last month and is the highest in Clackamas County. Canby's zip code has seen a total of 2,163 cases since the pandemic began in March of 2020, a figure representing roughly 10% of the area's population of 22,688. A third shot of Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine was approved late last week for Oregonians 65 and older, long-term care residents, those 18 to 64 with underlying medical conditions, and people whose occupation puts them at greater risk for exposure. State and federal health officials recommend people who received the final shot in their series at least 6 months ago are recommended to receive a booster. Brown said those who received the Pfizer jab are not eligible for the booster should know that they are fully protected, adding that the bonus shot's purpose is to offer an extra layer of protection for those who are especially vulnerable. As for vaccinating children, Pfizer has submitted data to federal emergency use regulators for making its shot available to 5 to 11-year-olds, but authorization is not expected before late October or early November. The next time you're in need of quality chef-prepared meal or an event spread fit for a king, you might want to look no further than King's Farm to Table, delicious new addition to the Holly Mall in downtown Canby that officially opens Friday, October 8th. King's Farm to Table, which started as a micro farm and farm stand located on Stafford Road in Wilsonville, has reinvented itself in its new digs as a high-end specialty market and scratch deli, offering chef-prepared, locally sourced, and inventive foods with a little something for everyone. What I really hope that we're able to do is that we're all things to all people, explained head chef Bill King, who owns the store with his wife Jennifer. I want to span the broad demographic of the folks who live in Canby. We want to do a lot of down-home comfort food, but then on the flip side, have some things that are a little fancier, pretty interesting, and more sophisticated. King says the deli will offer a wide variety of prepared foods, from familiar staples like meatloaf, fried chicken, potato salad, and macaroni and cheese, to more adventurous and exotic dishes like pork loin with apricot glaze, edamame salad with mint, and roast chicken with a basil chili vinaigrette. A big focus at the new storefront will be King's famous handcrafted barbecue, which samples the best regional techniques from across the United States: Texas brisket, Western Carolina-style pulled pork, and Tennessee baby back ribs. In addition to King's chef-prepared dishes, sides, and entrees, King's Farm to Table will offer a wide variety of locally sourced, high-quality products and grocery items, including Kraft jams, jellies, and applesauce, gourmet meat sticks, hot sauce, pickles, canned produce, potato chips and other snacks, syrup, dried fruit, and other condiments. King, who is a legend in the hospitality industry, practically grew up in food service and has been part of the culinary community in the rural Willamette Valley area south of Portland for more than 40 years, since 1980, when he came on as an executive chef at the Aurora Colony Inn. His career as a professional chef actually started one stop earlier than that, when he was made executive chef of Pearl Street Station in Eugene at age 24. He soon moved to Portland, where he owned and operated Savoir Faire, a French cafe and charcuterie that was rated at the top of the city's casual dining scene throughout the early 1980s. In 1985, King joined McCormick & Schmidt's restaurant group, which was a much smaller collection of five or six establishments back then. He was named executive chef of the original McCormick & Schmidt's seafood restaurant in downtown Portland the following year. He advanced as the company grew into a national and even global brand, one that was publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange and boasted more than 100 locations across the country. King was eventually named Vice President of Culinary Development and Training, which entailed culinary research and development. Can that be my job description, please? He also did corporate purchasing, facility design, and the development and opening of new restaurant locations. King's Farm to Table is located at the Holly Mall at 241 Northwest 2nd Avenue. That's right across the street from Gwyn's Coffee House, and will be open from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesday through Sunday. Cougar Country. Hometown sports coverage is brought to you by Reif and Hunsicker, PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. You can call them today at 503-266-3456. A pair of Canby brothers is headed to Barcelona, Spain next month to participate in a Balloon World Cup hosted by an international soccer star and Twitch streamer and inspired by their own viral TikTok videos. Go back and listen to that sentence again if you need to. And no, this is not an early April Fool's joke. Gerard Piqué, a Spanish professional soccer player for FC Barcelona, and streamer and esports commentator Ibai Llanos announced Monday that they will host a World Cup-style international tournament based around the balloon game, a sport in which players taking turns tapping a balloon so it doesn't fall to the ground. The tournament is said to include 16 countries. What you might not know is that this was all inspired by a trio of Canby siblings, Antonio, Diego, and Isabel Arredondo, and their viral TikTok and Instagram videos that have attracted millions of views and have been covered by the likes of Newsweek and SportsCenter. They have also evidently captured the attention of global superstar athletes and Spanish internet personalities. Antonio Arredondo, a senior at George Fox University who also serves as sports writer for the Canby Current, confirmed the siblings have been invited to Barcelona to participate in the inaugural tournament representing the United States and to be honored as the founders of the International Balloon League. Oh, I couldn't even describe how I feel, Antonio said. It's like one of my friends told me when we found out, Antonio, I have no idea how hitting a balloon is going to get you a trip to Barcelona. It didn't even strike me as real. But it is. Diego, a former Canby High School basketball star and freshman at Linfield College, is also planning to participate in the tournament in mid-October, as is their father, businessman Sabino Arredondo of the local accounting firm Wilcox Arredondo & Company. Isabel, a junior at the Canby High and a member of the volleyball team, is undecided. The Balloon World Cup is planned for October 14th with the matches live streamed on social media. Antonio has also promised to send us some videos and other updates from their adventure. For more information, you can follow the Balloon World Cup on Twitter. Good job by Canby and the Arredondos. And that'll do it for this news segment of Now Hear This Canby. I'm James Walton. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Attention hunters! The Canby Rod and Gun Club will be opening their 100-yard rifle range to the general public and club members later this month to give hunters and sportsmen the opportunity to ensure their firearms are properly sighted in before the hunting season kicks off. This year's sight-in days will be from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. the last two weekends in September, the 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th. The cost is $5 per gun and $1 per chamber flag, which is refundable upon return. The Canby Rod and Gun Club provides the range officers, targets, experienced spotters, and coaches at each firing point to help with the sighting in process. The Canby Rod and Gun Club is located about a mile southeast of Canby on the Malala Forest Road. Maps and more information are available at canbyrodandgun.org. No reservation necessary. Happy hunting. Over 70 years ago, a seed was planted in the rich, fertile soil of North Cambie. The seed was Swan Island dahlias, and today it has blossomed and grown into the largest leading dahlia grower on planet Earth. Family owned and operated, Swan Island is one of Oregon's premier agrotourism destinations, boasting 375 varieties and 40 acres of gorgeous blooms. A sea of color that is among the most jaw-dropping and unforgettable sights in the entire Pacific Northwest. While their fields and annual Dahlia Festival justifiably get a lot of attention, Swan Island has a lot of amenities you may not know about. Their selection of gifts, gardening supplies, and other unique finds is among the most expansive in Cambie area, and their fresh-cut flower shop, it's always worth stopping for. This summer, Swan Island is featuring a rotating menu of delicious food trucks Thursday through Sunday and a wide variety of fun classes for all interests and ability levels. The Dahlia Farm will also be hosting a local farmers market every Friday and live music shows through September. Swan Island and their amazing dahlia fields are open 6 days a week, 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., closed Wednesdays. For class registration, concert schedule, or more information, visit dahlias.com or follow Swan Island Dahlias on Facebook and Instagram.
Are you a healthcare hero? Do you want to become one? Are you looking for a position where you are valued, your time is your own, and you have ample opportunity for growth? Marquee companies at Hope Village in Cambie, Oregon offers all of that and more. They are currently hiring nurses, caregivers, CNAs, and enrolling students in their free CNA course. From competitive wages and up to $25,000 tuition reimbursement to flexible schedules and the opportunity to make a positive impact on someone's life, Marquee at Hope Village is the right place for you. Take your career to the next level and apply now to become a valued team member at Marquee at Hope Village in Cambie. To learn more or apply today, text CURRENT, that's CURRENT, to 888-906-3432. All right, joining us in the Cambie conversation today is David D. Jones. He's the creative director of Creatures of the Night, which is in its second year at the Clackamas County Scare Fair starting next month. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing well, Tyler. How are you?
I'm doing great. Why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about yourself, about Creatures of the Night, and how you got into being a professional haunter?
About 9 years ago, I've been in the haunting industry since the 80s. I've been acting in professional haunts, designing. It was about 9 years ago when we put on a haunt at Mary S. Young Park. It was a very small one the city of West Lynn was doing. We entered a contest. We set up a very small series of vignettes, a small series of scenes, and then quickly discovered that we had accidentally created an urban legend. 6 months after we'd performed, the city started getting calls asking, is that true? Is that what happened to the little girl? Is that what happened to Mary? And it started raising some questions for us. The second year we did it, we got shut down by a storm, and we were against all the local schools having proms, large theater events, and Major League Baseball, and had a very small attendance. But that Halloween, we found that multiple children in the Westland area were dressing up as our characters. So our most minimal year ever, we saw kids dressing up as our characters. We then realized we were kind of onto something. We started attending conventions around the country and listening to other haunters and, you know, very bashfully almost saying, well, I'm sure you guys have this happen all the time. And to an end, we were told no. And I'm like, well, I'm sure you guys accidentally create urban legends. No, we don't. Well, I'm sure kids dress up as your characters. You know, we're, you know, like, no. And that's when we realized we were accidentally doing things at a, and so we very deliberately sat down and worked on trying to figure out what we were doing and how to replicate it and consistently do it. And so that over the course of years, I actually went back to graduate or postgraduate school, spent quite a bit of time studying more and more neuroscience. I come from a neuropsychology background. And discovering what was going on in the brain, what was going on in the limbic system, what parts of the brain were being activated, how we were doing it. And so we have set, over that time, we have come up with a process of deliberately speaking to inner fears, childhood memories, and recasting them with different characters or our version of characters. And those are the memories those people have going forward. One of the classes that we actually teach is that you have 1.5 seconds to create a relationship, create an unanswerable question after summoning the monster that or fear that already exists in the person's brain. And yeah, you have to do all three of those in 1.5 seconds. And we've worked very hard at this. It is our family business. Every year our family meets and says, is this something we're doing? And they say yes. And it was also, we kind of formed it as our children were growing to the age where parents and children really kind of split off and start refinding, you know, their own. So this became a commonality of conversation, of purpose, intent. And so we were agreed upon on kind of what we were doing together as a family. And it's been very helpful for us, as well as many of the kids, volunteers, and families that we work with. One of the beautiful things about haunting, especially with the wonderful people we do, is people can come from every different background, but we're focused on the same goal of creating this magical experience for the child or even the inner child. And regardless of any perceived differences, everyone's on the same page, everyone gets along. And it is one of the most effective ways we found that we, as local members of the community, can change our community and actually help make the world a slightly better place. The reason being is the sound of a haunt is laughter. It's not screams, it's laughter, because that's how the people who are going through the haunt convey to each other that they're safe and we're okay. And it actually helps make them bond.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always so fascinated, and we've talked a number of times before, but I'm always so fascinated to hear how deep you and your team's thinking about the psychology of this whole process is. Cause I think a lot of people are like, you know, haunted houses, they just do them because they're fun, right?
Or yeah. Scared, absolutely. Right?
They're not expecting to go through a transformative process. And I'm like you say, that's okay. You know, they don't need to, you know, have these expectations. But I'm just curious how you sort of arrived at that. I guess it was your background as in psychotherapy.
Not psychotherapy. My background was in neuropsychology.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
No. There's a lot to that. So when we first did it the first year, it was a goof. We did that because I had an injured shoulder and we couldn't do our home haunt the year before. And we went and saw all the haunts in the greater Portland area. And we were like, we can do this. And so the next year we, you know, gathered some neighbors, et cetera. And it was the first year, you know, like I said, we weren't even expecting to do it at past the first year, but it was the amount of success, the amount that creatures suddenly connected and it made sense. Like we were started figuring things out. What I think it was Halloween haunting was an onion. And the more we kept peeling away and scratching at the layers, we kept finding more and more layers. And we started finding that it started resonating with universal concepts to everyone, every culture, every part of the planet. And so the more we kept digging, the more fascinating it became. And that kind of got to invoke my, you know, love of ancient history, our love of psychology, mythology, folklore, and starting to kind of, you know, you just kind of find replicating patterns. When we started trying to look at the history of haunting itself, we discovered it went back thousands of years and in every single culture. It doesn't go back just a little bit. Almost every culture we can find has a version of a haunted house, except it looked many different ways. It seems like we're almost conditioned to, or for whatever reasons, we make a cave, we make a bower, a hole, a secluded place, and we take others into it and say, these are the mysteries. That is common across the world. So your original question was about how did we start? So again, it kind of came in layers. Like the more we kept scratching it, the more we kept finding more and more. For example, for this year, the reason we're using a water theme, and you'll discover if you start looking at other haunts around the country, that many haunts this year are adopting a water theme. If you took a look at post 9/11, the television shows that came on the next year, they were all water-based, or people surrounded by water, and water was somehow an obstacle or the enemy. I think there was Surface, there was Lost, there was Beneath, there was like all the major networks. Everyone had a, you know, this was in response to terror and hurt. We kind of knew that after the last year and a half, 2 years, those kind of same elements were being invoked. We weren't sure what's safe. Things that look calm might be threatening. So those are themes that are kind of common in the zeitgeist for everyone, not just in the Willamette Valley, but across the country and across the world. So those are the kind of traditional story themes you use to convey that kind of fear. Each year you are conveying a completely different fear. And when we start our writing in January, February, we are trying to prognosticate what the society is going to be scared of come September or October. What's like, the thing that's going
to
be
like trying to predict a flu shot
predict a flu shot, predict, you know, predict what show's going to work a year before it's released, what movie's going to be the hit, what television show. So we worked very hard on that. So we kind of knew that we were going to be water themed. We also talked with you and many other people, finding local stories, histories, elements that we could use. And as we kept circling back, we realized that our Mary story is always kind of one of the best vehicles to launch these things off of. Mary was in our original story, was a girl who was abducted. She was taken someplace and came back. And she came back a little different. And she acts as kind of a protective, beneficent, helping people who are in dangerous situations, lost in forests, lost around water. That's kind of who her character is. And especially because we keep trying to make sure that the child and the adult are always knowing where they are, that's a good segue. It's very kind of shattering or discordant when you stand in line, you enter a haunt, and they go, now you're back in time 30 million years. And you're like, no, I'm not. My car is 20 feet behind me. No. So, you know, we use classical theater, film, storytelling elements to transition people into the experience, into where disbelief falls away and magic and possibility is possible. And then we treat it generally, this year it's a bit light, as kind of a three-act story structure.
Yeah,
there is introduction, there's conflict, there's resolution. And we try to mirror that. And it is, in a haunt, a lot of work.
Yeah, I bet. Coming into this year, it's really interesting because as I said, and folks probably remember, you're in your second year at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds, but last year was totally different. You were working with three other haunting outfits.
We were working with Nightmare Factory out of Salem. We were working with the Davis Graveyard out of Milwaukee. We were working with Fearlandia, who's out of Tigard, and Pumpkin Display of West Lynn, who's out of West Lynn. I've tried to make sure, because he always kind of gets dropped. He did a lot of the beautiful carved pumpkins and archways and portals as people came through.
Yeah.
That's all his work. He's amazing.
Love that. Okay. Well, and apologies to him. Yeah.
No. And the haunting community here in the greater, you know, Willamette Valley area is phenomenal because we all share. We aren't trying to squeeze out everyone else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was really neat. But the big difference, obviously, was it was a drive-through experience. This year, we're back to in person. I'm wondering if you can, you started to tell the story a little bit, but just give people a little more sense of what this experience will be like as a participant, what they can expect.
So last year, if you came through on the drive-through, that was pure escapism. There was no deeper, greater themes. We were really just providing an outlet people were, you know, outside of their houses for the, many of them for the first time driving. Everyone had to stay in their car. And there's only so much story you can tell if you don't have Walt Disney's budget in a ride-through haunt. This year, we are tapping into kind of the greater feels, disquiet everyone's already holding. We are evoking, as the people enter the haunt, they will encounter Mary holding her candle, as she often does. It's kind of her signature item. And her face is going to be shocked. Her face is confused because everyone's arrived 100 years too early. She knew that something bad was coming up. She knew something was calamitous and was going to try to help anyone who accidentally stumbled into it. But everyone's shown up 100 years earlier, which will explain why Mary, and like everyone else in the haunt, is wearing their masks, because that would have been the 1917 influenza epidemic. So we're okay. Tying that back. And so we always, you want to make sure that anything you're putting in like that has a thematical connection, and that there's a reason for it, not just, oh, look, it's a zombie who just happens to be wearing a mask. It's right. It's Frankenstein's monster who happens to be wearing a mask.
Right.
So you have to give reason, cause. And again, when we're writing our story, we're always writing to both the cortical structure, which is all where we do our clever thinking, our story writing, but we're also talking to the limbic system, which is the primitive part of the brain that is reactive, and it is terrified, and it's anxious, and it's the one that stores all your childhood memories and trauma. And so that it recognizes a monster, even if your cortical processes don't. If the executive functions don't recognize it, it knows what it is, and it's going to start flooding your body with adrenaline and all sorts of hormones to try to keep you alive. So we're always having two different scripts, two different conversations with our guests. And then the story progresses, and then you'll have to buy a ticket to find what happens after that.
No spoilers. Yeah. No spoilers here on the Now Hear This Can Be podcast. I guess the last thing that I definitely wanted to ask you about, David, and we talked about this before as well, but just you've spoken about the importance of haunts, of what you do, and the lasting effect it can have. You've spoken about the importance of Halloween and just bringing that back after this, you know, difficult year and difficult mm-hmm. continuing 18-month period that we're all going through. I'd love to just ask you to share a little bit about that, about what you see as kind of the larger importance of this holiday, of these traditions, of maybe these new traditions that folks are trying out, maybe coming out to see Creatures of the Night here in Canby for the first time.
And Scarefair. We are always Scarefair and Creatures of the Night.
Hey, Frankie, what are you doing?
I'm trying to figure out which TV option I want to use when DirectLink turns off their video services in January of next year. It's so confusing. Do you know there's about 40 million streaming services to choose from? Which devices do they work on? What channels do they offer?
No, I did not know that. But you do realize that you're probably better off than you think. If you have DirectLink's Easy Video TV now, you're already using a streaming service. But listen, you don't have to go this alone. DirectLink is actually helping their members transition to their next video provider. The company has an extensive informational website where you can compare popular services, and they host live tutorials on streaming TV options to help you decide.
Well, hold the phone. Are you saying that they're actively trying to help their members switch to a competing service? Who does that?
Well, DirectLink does. I mean, I guess it's one more chapter in their long history of wanting the best for our community. They've actually offered free classes for the past 12 years that teach our neighbors about the latest technology and internet security practices. And don't forget, they also orchestrated that popular bingo game last year that helped keep everyone entertained and connected during the lockdowns. They've also launched special programs to help keep our students connected at home during the pandemic, and partnered with the city of Canby to give free Wi-Fi year-round at 3 local parks for locals and visitors alike.
Wait, DirectLink does all that?
They do indeed, and that's on top of providing the best and most reliable internet and voice services in town. So, To learn more about Direct Link services or how they can help you transition to the right video service for your home, visit directlink.coop today.
Hi, I'm Megan Waterman. I'm the owner and operator of the Book Nook in Canby, Oregon.
And I'm Tyler Clausen of Now Hear This Canby, the show you're listening to. Megan, the Book Nook is one of my favorite places in all of Canby. It's a one-stop shop for gifts, board games, new books, used books, and books from local authors. Why did you decide to open it?
Well, I love the power of a story. I love how reading about different people and places, times, stretches my mind. It makes me see the world differently, whether that's a fantasy story or a biography. It all changes the lens that I see and how I interact with people. The reason that we added games to our store is for that same reason. It's just a different way to experience story through gameplay.
And along with new selection, you're at a new location, right?
We are. We just moved, technically just across the intersection to the old Parsons building. We've expanded our space and also our selection. So we've got more books, more gifts. We added a larger gaming section. And now with the world opening back up a little bit more, we're starting to relaunch some of our events. We have relaunched our general fiction and our fantasy book clubs, and those are going great. And we're about ready to kick off game nights, starting with our beginner Dungeons & Dragons camp, led by Canby's very own Tyler Clausen.
Hey, that's me! If you're interested in D&D, make sure you stop by the Book Nook and get more information about role-playing opportunities there.
Yeah, or stop by anytime and chat with one of our booksellers about their current book recommendations and let us help you find your next favorite read. We're now open on Sundays as well, so we're there 7 days a week.
Nice. The Book Nook is in downtown Canby or online at booknookcanby.com.
So I want to paraphrase, sorry, I get distracted visually. The question was, break down the question again.
Yeah, no. So just tell us a little bit about kind of the larger importance that you feel
of Halloween,
do in Halloween. Yeah.
So again, it wasn't until we started doing this professionally that we kind of started finding importance. Halloween is, or at least the modern concept of it, the American version of it, is one of the more we keep peeling it open, the more we find that this is a holiday that is important to save and important to keep sacred. It is the one night we feed strangers who come to our door. This is the one night we are kind to everyone. It's the night where that anyone you see driving on the commute to work who's wearing a costume, you're laughing, you're smiling with them. We're all agreeing to play a larger game together, and we're all agreeing to the rules. Halloween is generally the safest night to be a child. Halloween is the night we are, in many ways, the best version of ourselves we can be. We feed strangers, we engage in play and friendliness and compassion and understanding to all those around us, and we all agree to play this together. We're all kind of focused on, hey, let's not screw it up. Let's not be awful tonight. Tonight, let's try to do something that makes you laugh and makes me laugh. Let's try to do that. And it's an agreed upon thing. How amazing is that? How phenomenal to have people agreeing, hey, no, today we get along. Today we agree, we don't argue. Today we agree, we share for the kids. It is, and again, Halloween, different variations of it all over the planet. There's many of them, but more so the haunting tended to be more universal. This year especially, a lot of kids had Halloween taken away from them this year. Most kids and your audience will remember a Halloween where they grew up. And it was probably somewhere between 7 and 10, 7, 12, somewhere around that era, that there was a couple Halloweens where they got to dress up of the person they wanted to become. They got to put on the who I'm going to be in the future. They got to decide if they wanted to be a hero, if they wanted to be whatever. And even as adults, when we put on costumes, there is an old Greek saying, there are certain masks you wear to tell truth. And that's kind of what we do. We put on these costumes to explore a part of ourselves, even if it's just internally, that the rest of the world doesn't ever get to see, because we have, you know, the worlds that happen inside ourselves. So it's the one time we get to kind of break the barriers a little bit, try new things, and get to see how other people react to this altered version of yourself. It is, again, the more we kept peeling it open, this does nothing but help people. This does nothing but bring kindness. And this generation of kids, they have gone through a lot, more so than a couple other generations. And that is area specific, etc. But we want to give it back. So the things that the children of last year didn't have, we want to make sure they have now. We want to make sure that they feel that welcomeness, that safety, that acceptance to be something or to explore and try to find out who you are in this world. Many of us have been in lockdown or in quarantine or not being able to see friends, family, relatives. Halloween, one of the things that we keep finding that in the processing of grief, it takes other people. And to have a holiday that acknowledges sometimes bad things happen, sometimes there's loss, sometimes people never come back. And to acknowledge that that happens and to be okay with it and to be able to share that with others. We mock death by dressing up as skeletons. We mock these things, but that's a coping mechanism. And we are effectively giving a large dose of, hey, you can deal with this for another month or so. We're giving our clients, our customers, our staff, our volunteers, you can change the world. You can, you know, magic, things are possible. You can make change. You're not stuck. That's kind of the greatest gift we can be giving this year.
Yeah.
Did that answer the question?
It did. Yes. Okay. Thank you so much, David. Just real quickly to your point about kids, one thing we didn't talk about, you guys do this Haunt Junior experience, which is a little modified for younger kids at the start of some of your haunts.
So when we first started doing this, my daughters were very young. And they loved being on a haunt. Being on a haunt, and if you want to volunteer, it is the safest place to be that night because you're the monster. You're the most terrifying thing in the forest. Nothing can mess with you. To a child, that's incredible. They don't ever get to feel like that. We took them to other haunts, we couldn't communicate to the staff. The kids were way past capacity. They were too scared. They couldn't, they're yelling and screaming at us. I'm scared. I need to get out. And we're trying to flag down an employee or an actor and say, whoa,
And
it was very difficult. So the first thing we did was create the creature candle. And the creature candle is the foam baton that acts as a magic amulet that allows anyone to control their experience. They can hold it up. Every monster will cover their face and step backwards. Scenes will be different. Dialogue will be different. You're saying I'm past capacity and we want to make it so that you're enjoyable, because the person going through the haunt is the hero of that story. Mm-hmm. They're the Luke Skywalker going through the horrible things and surviving. The Haunt Junior. So we created the creature candle so that every child can be in control of their own level of safety and comfort, as well as adult. Haunt Junior, we noticed a couple of years ago that people were bringing younger and younger ages. And we had a very clear rule. Generally, we said, look, to make this scary enough for the 18 to 30 year olds, there's no way we can dumb it down for a 10 or not dumb it down. We can't defang it for a 10-year-old.
Right.
So we created Haunt Junior. Haunt Junior is for children age 10 and under, 12 and under, who can come in and have a spooky experience, not a scary. It's magical. It's not terrifying. It's Scooby-Doo. It's not Scream or, you know,
yeah,
it's not Scream.
Yeah.
So that allows them to be controlled. We do that the first Saturdays from 7 to 8, and that's for all families. It's a reduced ticket price. For example, you don't get attacked by werewolves. You get to meet the puppies, and the puppies will come and play and yip around you, and everything is support or friendly.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. I really love that. That's cool. And I appreciate that as a dad of young kids. So, okay. Well, David D. Jones, it's been so great having you on today. Check out ClackamasCountyFair.com/scare-fair for more information about this year's event. And creatureshaunt.com and Creatures of the Night on social media for some of the same information about the Scare Fair, as well as some more background information about you guys. David, is there anything else that you'd like to share with folks or tell folks before you go?
CCScareFair.com is also is kind of easy to remember. Clackamas County Events Center has been absolutely amazing. We are so glad to partner with them. And we are grateful to you and the conversations we've been able to have with you, Tyler, as well as everyone in Canby. Come up and talk to us after the haunt. Come this weekend. Come decide if you want to work in a haunt.
Yeah.
Come see if how we can make your story better. And if not, and also because we're already writing for next year and we'd like your stories. Help us craft the story you want to see come for you.
Awesome. Great, David. Thanks so much. Thanks for all of your hard work. I know you and your team are just working so hard to create a memorable and awesome Halloween experience for our community this year, and we really appreciate it. And thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Tyler. And have a most wonderful, amazing, and possibly scary October.
Right back at you.
All right. Take care.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.
And now, a message from Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes.
Hi, everyone. I wanted to take this moment to invite you personally to come and hang out with us for our end of season client event. It's a thank you to all the wonderful people we've done business with, as well as a welcome to a lot of our community. I'm doing this in partnership with Vanessa Zimmerman, Zimmerman team at Academy Mortgage. It's just kind of our way of saying thank you. We've really enjoyed getting to know you, doing business with you, etc. We'll be outside. We're sensitive to the fact that we're in COVID, still dealing with that. so it will be spread out. People will have room to breathe and sit and walk and talk. Reckless Company, if you've never heard them before, they're awesome. They're going to be playing. We'll have TMK here. I can't wait to try the corn dog. I've been waiting like 2 years to try this corn dog. So it looks amazing, and I've heard it's amazing, and I think there's quite a following. Also, they'll have all kinds of other food. We'll have beer and cider. Everything's hosted, of course, as a thank you. Again, it's for our clients. It's for our community. We really, really want to come and celebrate. We'll have swag for you, all kinds of fun things for the kids. We hope to see you on 9/16 from 4 to 8 in the afternoon.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Camby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Camby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Camby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Camby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Camby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City, or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Camby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Camby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Camby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Camby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe, and we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.